It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Body dysmorphic disorder, or BDD, is a body image disorder characterized by persistent and intrusive preoccupations with an imagined or slight defect in one's appearance. BDD most often develops in adolescence and teens, and research shows that it affects men and women almost equally. Our guest, Pittsburgh native Brian Cuban, has chronicled his battles with BDD as well as his addictions to alcohol, cocaine, and steroids in his book, Shattered Image. He joins us in Studio A. Brian Cuban, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me on.
What is the reaction you get from people when they realize here is a man with BDD and an eating disorder?
Well, first off, the reaction for BDD is most people don't know what it is. So you have to educate them. BDD has actually been around as a disorder for over 100 years, but it's only been studied in earnest for maybe the past 7 or 8. So you'll have doctors who don't even know what it is, psychologists, and they have to educate themselves. So, and it's almost always associated with women, but as you said, it affects men and women equally. The eating disorder part is, you know, a little bit different. That's almost exclusively associated with women in the perception. I've had people tell me I'm a liar because men don't get eating disorders.
Who told you that?
People in social media, when I talk about, I'm very open about it, and they'll say, you can't have an eating disorder because it only happens to women. And this perception dates back to when singer Karen Carpenter passed away.
Right.
In 1983, the pre-digital age, you know, it kind of brought eating disorders into the national spotlight. She died from complications related to anorexia nervosa. But it also kind of cemented the stereotype as a woman's disorder. And while the conversation has progressed exponentially for women since 1983, and women tend to be much more comfortable with this conversation, there's still that shame and stigma for men where they just, one, going through it, believe they're the only one. And two, there's just so much shame because society teaches us that men, you know, love the Steelers. Men are the wage earners. You know, men are hunters. Men don't starve themselves. Men don't stick their fingers down their throat. That's what women do. So it's a very shameful thing for men, but it's getting better. And it's getting better because we have more strong male voices who are opening up about it. We have more treatment options. Back when I was going through this and when I became anorexic in 1979, I mean, there was no treatment. I mean, there was not much treatment for women. Karen Carpenter hadn't even passed away yet. And for a guy to go through it, forget it. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what I was going through. But now we have beds for men and treatment facilities. We have treatment directed at men. And, well, it's still much more geared towards women. Men are really now becoming part of the eating disorder conversation.
What brought this about? And one thing we should mention is that you are the younger brother of Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban. How much, if any, did perhaps living in his shadow, even though he wasn't, you know, the person we know today, this Maverick, literally a Maverick owner, was there something going on in terms of the brother-to-brother dynamic that might have impacted this?
That's a great question. I get asked that a lot. From the eating disorder standpoint and the body dysmorphic disorder standpoint, no. Those things developed well before Mark became known and developed celebrity. From the lack of identity standpoint that can go with body dysmorphic disorder, when you don't have your own identity and you're seeing this fat, ugly kid in the mirror who's not accepted, this bullied child, that's all you see even when you're an adult, and you're struggling to figure out who you are, yes, that certainly became an issue in terms of drug abuse and alcoholism because I was very shy growing up. I didn't kiss a girl till I was 24 years old, didn't go on my first date till I was 24 years old, and I just wanted acceptance. I had this very middle child syndrome personality, and I just wanted acceptance. I gauged everything by acceptance. Who was I being accepted with? By the other students? By the girls? Would I ever get to go on a date, you know, go to the prom? And when all of a sudden you're shoved into a situation where you have no identity of your own, you become that. I call it name fame. Okay, now girls are coming up to me. Now people are buying me drinks. Now this is going on. Now that's going on. I'm accepted. I'm finally accepted. And of course, you're not really accepted. And I assume that identity. And of course, that's not Mark's fault. That has everything to do with me. And that did play a part in the drug addiction and the alcohol abuse.
And is it common for someone with this to fall victim to substance abuse?
Yes. With body dysmorphic disorders, 30% will develop eating disorders. You have drug addiction, alcoholism. I also abuse steroids. I abuse plastic surgery. I've gone through them all. Also, you could have cutting. You can have I'm trying to think some of the others. I mean, you can go through all kinds of destructive behaviors with body dysmorphic disorder.
We're talking with Brian Cuban, who is the author of the book Shattered Image, which details his battle with the chronic disorder of body dysmorphic disorder, I should say, or BDD. How supportive was your brother in your recovery?
My family was very supportive. As within any family where you have addiction and alcohol abuse, there's always a gray area that families have to figure out, the gray area between enablement, love, enablement, and recovery. And every family, it's different. My family was no different. You have to figure out where that is. And once we figured out where recovery was, my family was incredibly supportive in providing me the tools to recover. You can't make somebody recover from addiction, from eating disorders. My family didn't even know about my eating disorder until I went public in 2008. But the addiction, obviously, they did know about. The alcoholism, they knew about. And once I was able to get honest with them and myself about where I was, and I was a mess, they were able to help me provide the tools to allow me, if I chose to take that road, to move forward in recovery. They were very supportive.
How different might things have been for you, Brian, if you had the resources available to you growing up that are out there today?
I try not – you know what? That's a great question, and I don't dwell on that because recovery is about moving forward, and recovery is about looking at where I am today and figuring out what can I do to make myself better. For me to dwell on what I could have been – and I've gone through that. I've gone through terrible depression, you know, thinking about the years wasted, what I could have been, and it's just self-destructive. I figure out where I'm going. I focus on where I'm going. And recovery is a continuing process. I still am in recovery today. You know, I still have to watch myself. I'm a recovering addict. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm a recovering bulimic and anorexic. I always have to structure my life to, you know, to deal with triggers, you know, that could send me back into those behaviors.
Have you allowed yourself to feel accomplished today? I mean, you've written a book. This certainly is going to help people. Are you easing up on yourself? Sounds like you've been you and probably others who suffer from this are very hard on themselves.
I take great pride in that I'm able to pay forward the suffering that I've been through and let people know, whether it's addiction, depression, eating disorders, know that they're not alone and that there is hope if you're willing to take that first step. That's why I wrote Shattered Image. You know, a lot of these self-help memoirs start out as a cathartic experience. You're doing it to help yourself.
And it must have been that. I mean, clearly it had to have been that from the things that you've put out there.
Absolutely. It started out as that. And as I got further into it, the thought process changed. Well, I had to go through this for a reason. And so I'm going to be as transparent as I can be, and I think I have been, and let other people know that people do suffer from these things and there is recovery. And I want them to know that even at – I'm 53 years old. Even at 53 years old, there's recovery. At 43 years old, there's recovery. At 18 years old, there's recovery. You just have to want to take it. And that's the hard part, wanting it.
What do you think can be done to help wipe out our nation's fixation with image, with body image and appearance?
I think that starts at home with teaching our children to love themselves, whether they're fat, thin, round, short, disabled. Our parents have to not be fixated on the societal pressures of image themselves and teach our children that it's okay that you are loved and you are 100% whole and you are accepted no matter what you look like, because the images around us, unless there's some fundamental shift in the way society sees body image, that's never going to change. That's not going to change. So our children have to be taught to love themselves with all of these distractions and these body image messages around them. And it's important to note that a parent can do all the right things and a child can still have these issues. It is not the parent's fault. We know that eating disorders are biologically based. So a parent can do all the right thing and the child still be triggered by some genetic predisposition in the eating into an eating disorder. I don't blame my parents. You know, you have to work the problem and teach our children, we have to teach our children to function within these images and not beat themselves up because of these images.
Brian Cuban is the author of Shattered Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder. Brian, thank you so much for taking time to join us here in studio and share your story with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. And I'll just say, if you're going through this, you're not alone.
Thank you again. Coming up tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, we will be visiting with our business correspondent, Rebecca Harris. And we thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.FM or as a podcast in iTunes. And we welcome your comments and story ideas at ESSPGH at WESA.FM. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.